Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And if you notice my chuckling a little bit, why, of course, up here on the screen, my producer had written in no answer, meaning the guest wasn't going to be available. And so I'm sitting here wondering what I'm going to say for this next hour because, of course, I don't have anything prepared. When suddenly the lights changed on the screen and it said, Joel Skousen is here. Joel, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you. I couldn't pick up. I was on another national interview when your staff just called, so I'm available now.
All right. Well, I'm so glad you are. And, of course, are we going to talk about Haiti? What are we going to talk about this afternoon?
Certainly we can. You know, it's a hot topic right now. It's very important for people to understand what's going on in Haiti. Has this audience...
No, they haven't heard the
discussion. Haven't heard my analysis
right.
before on that, so we need to probably go through some background information. There's a real wild thing coming up in Israel now about the Tannenbaum revelations, which we can talk about later on. But let's go to the Haiti subject right now.
All right, let's go for it.
Well, as we speak, the U.S. is attempting to... desperately manipulate the opposition there to get the kind of government that they can once again control in Haiti after having ousted through a direct coup Aristide. They're denying, of course, that they did oust Aristide. They're claiming that he voluntarily resigned and left the country, but I'll explain to your audience why I don't think that that is true.
Well, hasn't Aristide actually said that he was handcuffed and forced to leave and kidnapped and taken to the Central African Republic?
That's correct. Now, even though Aristide is a communist, and I'm just the opposite of that, and he's calling and all of this information is coming through arch-left sources who are his supporters in the United States, Maxine Waters, former representative from Georgia, arch-leftist Ron Dellums, one of the reddest of the former congressmen in the United States, and Randall Robinson, another arch-leftist. These are people I don't normally trust as far as I can throw them, but here's why I believe that Aristide is telling the truth. He had total control of all the government machinery, and the rebels were not in control of Port-au-Prince, where he was in. Residence wasn't when he was running the government at the time that the United States intervened or he claimed that he resigned. There is no way that a communist leader with the kind of total control that he had would leave the country without doing several things first. Even if we reflect, he would, of course.
Well, you seem to be cutting in and out. Are you okay?
Yeah, that's your staff trying to call me on my other line.
All right, go ahead.
So, tell them that I'm on the line.
Okay.
But in any case, the key thing is that he would never have left that country had he not given instruction of where he was going, what he was going to do, and how to communicate with him so he can control the things behind the scene. No one got any word from him, therefore he was kidnapped, as he claimed.
All right, fine. Well, we're going to be back here in just a couple of minutes with Joel Skousen as we begin to explore what happened in Haiti recently. Now, there's no question the American government was behind Aristide. It was a lifelong communist. Certainly we know, and those of you who have any question, we can document the fact that the United States government brought Fidel Castro to power knowing he was a communist. We put Mugabe in power in Rhodesia knowing he was a communist. We brought the communist to power in China. If you need my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, we document it all there. Let's be back in just a moment with Joel Skousen. Well, our guest this afternoon is Joel Skousen. And Joel, of course, publishes the World Affairs Brief, and we're talking with him this afternoon about Aristide. And Aristide, we're told, just fled from Haiti, just jumped on a plane and flew over to the Central African Republic, something of the sort. Aristide claims he was actually kidnapped by the American government and forced to leave. Now, of course, who can you believe? Well, we know how they kidnapped Fernand Marcos in the Philippines and flew him to Hawaii and then charged him there with stealing money. And I don't know whether he stole money or not. I do know when they tried to go after his wife, why American government looked very embarrassed, because when they put Mrs. Marcos on trial and they spent tens of millions of dollars trying to convict her for all the crimes of her husband, why, she got off scot-free. But let's talk about Aristide now. And, of course, it is Joel's contention that the American government is not being forthright. And could you tell our new people who just joined us on the news station why you feel that Aristide probably was kidnapped by U.S. government officials rather than, of course, leaving spontaneously or of his own volition, as the U.S. State Department claims?
Well, the essential fact is that he had total control of the government machinery in Haiti, and Haiti wasn't under direct threat when he left the country. So there is no reason why he would not have set up communications, told his followers where he was going, and in other ways set up a communications link so that he, like all other communist dictators in exile, can continue to manipulate the affairs of the country. The fact that he made virtually no telephone calls, was not allowed to speak to anybody before he left, indicated that he was taken by force, as he said. And even though this is a communist who you normally wouldn't be able to trust what they say, this simply does not match the reality of what would have happened with a communist government leaving power under duress. The government, our government did take him by force, and the specifics, I think, are very accurate. He was handcuffed. The Marines burst into his home. I think it's also interesting that his bodyguards, which were U.S. trained and controlled through U.S. taxpayer money by the Sweet Corporation out of San Francisco, following on after DynCorp. DynCorp is that notorious mercenary company paid for by U.S. taxpayer money that does the dirty tricks for government operations that they don't want to have our own military involved in.
So, aren't they affiliated with the CIA, more or less?
Sure, they're a CIA front. There's several of these corporations, MPRI and Benelli Corporation. All of these are started by...
Hold that thought right there, Joel. All right, of course, Joel Skousen is our guest this afternoon. He's talking about how the guards around, of course, Aristide, his bodyguards, were coming from DynCorp, which is an American corporation, provides military personnel throughout the world. It's really a CIA front, of course, but, of course, we don't want the American people to know that. We want them to think of all of these Soldier of Fortune organizations are just spontaneous adventurers who are out there risking their lives and getting large sums of money for doing it. In military activities, they would be put in prison as American citizens for doing what they're doing if they weren't, of course, carrying out the real functions of the CIA. So pick up the story from there. And apparently, what did the bodyguards, the DynCorp bodyguards of Aristide, do when the Marines burst into his enclave?
Well, once again, this is DynCorp has been replaced by another up-and-coming mercenary company out of San Francisco, so it wasn't really DynCorp unless they are a subsidiary. But they simply withdrew and left him to be captured by the U.S. Marines. So this is very interesting. You know, RST believes all these years that he's protected by the best that the United States can provide, and yet the United States does that so that they can control the situation when they want to remove a communist dictator.
So we put communists into power, we take communists out of power.
That's right, and the reason is very simple. In the beginning years, we have all of this history from the 1930s onward, where the United States has installed communist regimes, as you have so ably discussed many times on your program. The reason they do this is to break down the free market, to break down the middle class and the upper class, and also to corrupt with benefits and with socialism the normal people, to make them dependent upon socialism. The United States can't get caught doing that directly because they're supposed to be a free market country. So they hire communists by supporting communist revolutions. Sometimes they play like they're opposing them. the U.S. has their hands in both sides of the equation. Oftentimes they use the National Endowment for Democracy to fund leftists to overthrow. That's what happened to me when I was advising free market political parties in El Salvador and Guatemala in the 80s. It's that our opposition came with U.S. taxpayer money from the Endowment of Democracy, and they were arch-leftists. They wanted to make sure in America that free market parties trying to establish a U.S.-style constitution in El Salvador and Guatemala did not get elected. That's our own taxpayer money doing that. Why did they do this? Because they want to corrupt the country, and they actually want it to go downhill so bad, as it has in Haiti, two-thirds unemployment, ruthless government, you can't even get a building permit unless you pay dues to the mafia organizations, all leftist, Navalis family party organizations that Aristide runs there in Haiti. So it's really a controlled system. You squeeze the country enough, there's a rebellion. When that rebellion comes, then the globalists once again can step in and remove the same communists that they installed in power and then give them a more moderate socialist globalist government that they can control and that the people will accept, because now this is a more moderate form and it looks better than what they had before. But they still don't get liberty. The middle class never gets freed up. The lower classes never get the opportunity to start businesses and move in, up in society. And that's, how the globalists play this dual role of being pro-communist for one period of time and then removing communists. Now, are you still there, Stan?
I certainly am.
It's very important to understand that up until a couple of, last week, the United States was still supporting Aristide. They were attempting to force a power-sharing agreement upon the opposition. And it's also important to remember the opposition were mostly breakaways from Aristide's own socialist and communist parties. They were the more ideological, some of them. There are liberals who become communists because they really believe in the government should have the power to raise the poor up and take money from the rich. They don't understand the hidden victims and the evil of the poor. There are other communists who are truly Marxist, Stalinist, ruthless people who lust for power and use communists for that purposes. The higher echelons, the police forces, are generally the more ruthless type, and the intellectuals, college professors that get involved in Marxist are usually the more naive liberal types. But in any case, a lot of the ideological Marxists left the Aristide movement because communism in Haiti couldn't deliver the goods, and the poor were worse off than they've ever been. So this was a spontaneous revolution that actually caught the U.S. State Department flat-footed. Even though someone like ourselves who believe that there is a globalist conspiracy, that things are managed in society, we have to realize that sometimes the globalist establishment gets caught flat-footed. And this revolution came up very, very rapidly. They tried to stabilize it through supporting Aristide. The opposition wasn't going to have any of it. And so all of a sudden they went to Plan B. They said, all right, we're going to take Aristide out by force, and then we're going to manipulate the results. And here's how they're attempting to do it. First of all, they're protecting all of Aristide's lieutenants in Haiti. In other words, they're still going to use Aristide's Lavalas movement to run Haiti. They're just going to quell the dissent by making it appear that the bad guy's gone, so you can be satisfied now. At the same time, they're trying to put back in the box the opposition forces that have got military power. They're relatively weak. They are not funded by the CIA. Essentially, these are holdovers from the old military that was disbanded. They kept a lot of their arms in secret. They've been waiting for a time. They're no more than about 1,500 armed people, a very small force. And the only reason, without a large-scale funding by the CIA or anyone else, that they've been able to run this revolution is because Aristide made the very dumb mistake for a communist of disbanding the military. Unlike Hugo Chavez in Venezuela, who controlled the military, removed all the right-wing officers, installed socialist and Marxist officers so that he can control the military for his purposes. That's why the opposition in Venezuela, which is much bigger than in Haiti, is not able to overthrow Hugo Chavez, whereas they were able to overthrow Aristide because he made that tactical mistake of removing the military.
In other words, he didn't have any military to defend him then.
That's right. All he had were these police forces, and they're fairly corrupt themselves. They ran at the drop of the hat, turned to looting. They had a lot of corrupt thugs and gangs that were hired by Aristide and worked a coalition with the Lavalas party in order to maintain power. They would essentially run a shakedown operation of the, what's left of the middle class and the businessmen in Haiti to sustain themselves in power. There's a great deal of drug importation in Haiti. It's my opinion that the CIA conduit that was coming through Panama during the Noriega years was transferred to Haiti and a few other islands from Colombia, where the U.S. controls most of the drug trade coming out of there through the CIA. That's one of the reasons why they were supporting RSD. There was a globalist reason to break down the nation, to give them an excuse to come in with a globalist leader. That's what we're going to see right now. They're scrutinizing very carefully who they're going to pick. Right now, the Prime Minister, Yvonne Neptune, is being protected by U.S. Marines. So is the Supreme Court Justice, who is the titular head of government now through the Constitution until the next election. And we're going to see probably a delay in elections until the U.S. can make sure that they determine who gets to be boss. It's very interesting that the triumvirate that they are installing to run Haiti temporarily is very much like the Iraqi Governing Council, very much manipulated. You have one representative from the Lawless Party, one representative from the opposition, which is a disparate group of four or five different oppositions that haven't agreed on anything. And so you can bet they're going to pick the most leftist opposition of that to come in, and then they're going to have a U.S. administrator as the third one. So they have three people, and he's going to make the determination, just like Bremer does. Has to sign off on everything that the Iraqi Council does. He's got a vetoing power.
And I think, I think the American people have to understand, we install governments throughout the world, and we finance people. They may not be supported by the people, as, for instance, Musharraf is not supported by the people of Pakistan, but we keep him there in power, and, of course, we finance him and the military. We keep Mubarak in power in Egypt. We keep these people in power, and we actually topple the Shah and brought the Ayatollah Khomeini and the radical Iranian government to power in Iran. People don't understand that this is how the game is really played. We didn't like Marcus, something had done. Obviously, we were behind the revolution. We kidnapped him, took him out of the country, and we put in a government into the Philippines that we wanted. And it's about time the American people really understood how the game is really played. And believe me, I mean, we're doing everything we can to build up the economy and the military force in communist China today. Why would you do something that foolish? Why would we be doing everything to fund and help Putin in Russia when, of course, the opposition over there says the Americans have got to stop backing Putin and allow us to have some sort of a democratic society? The American people are responsible for what our government does, and men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. Would you agree with that?
Well, in almost all regards, the American people have been denied the essential information, however, because of the collusion of the media with government to suppress. You don't ever see, in fact, there was an article on the Internet, a very cogent article, I forgot who wrote it, about how the media is covering for what's going on in Russia. You simply do not see any major coverage about the very undemocratic turn of events in Russia. Now, you and I both know that the fall of the Soviet Union was a carefully crafted deception that didn't really occur. The communists simply went underground, calling themselves oligarchs or mafia. They took control of all of the essential industry of the of Russia, and they controlled Putin. They controlled Yeltsin before him. The proof of that was Spanish intelligence leaking the information that Putin had met with Boris Berezovsky in his villa in southern Spain five times before he ascended to power. His first act after becoming president was to denounce Boris Berezovsky as a mafia oligarch and put a price on his head. He can't come back into Russia, but that's all smoke and mirrors.
It's all showbiz, right?
Yeah, he did that to make it appear as if he's against the oligarch. In fact, Putin... Berezovsky, I think, still runs Russia, and Putin is his lackey.
And, of course, we've got Gorbachev over here occupying the Presidio in San Francisco, one of the most powerful men in America. What's wrong with this picture? Well, go ahead. We're going to have to go to a break. When we get back, of course, we'll continue with Joel Scouse and his critique on what's really going on as far as Haiti. Why, of course, we're going along with taking out Aristide, who we put in power in 1994. Do you remember how we put him in power? And, of course, now we're taking him out of power. It's amazing how the wheel turns. We'll be right back here at Radio Liberty. 4-tape set on the JFK assassination includes an interview with Lee Harvey Oswald. Of course, it's not an interview that I did, but it is an interview, and you'll actually hear Lee Harvey Oswald talking before the time of the assassination, a two-hour interview with Colonel Fletcher Prouty, who was the liaison between the Pentagon and the CIA at the time of the assassination of an American president, and then, of course, my overall analysis of the reasons why President Kennedy was assassinated. There's so much information that has not been put out, and if you listen to this four-tape set, you will begin to understand that there are forces at work behind the scenes which have been able to confuse the American people about the reality of the murder of an American president. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, that's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for the JFK assassination tapes.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. In the 1970s, there was a group of Italian immigrants in the small town of Rosetto, Pennsylvania, who drew worldwide attention for their unusual cardiovascular health, despite their pasta diets. I recently uncovered the fact that their unusual health was attributed to the precious red wine which they imported from Italy. Today we know this as the French paradox, the fact that the French exhibit greater cardiovascular health despite their fatty diet because of the red wine they drink. Wouldn't it be great to enjoy the health benefits of red wine without the calories, alcohol, and sulfite preservatives? Well, now you can with Longevinex, the world's first stabilized red wine molecules preserved in an airtight capsule just like in a sealed bottle of red wine, equivalent to 5 glasses of the best red wine. Call 866-405-4000 to order Longevinex for healthy aging without the calories and alcohol. 866-405-4000.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Let me just mention that we have a wonderful four-tape set on the JFK assassination, two-hour interview with Fletcher Prouty, who was the Pentagon liaison to the CIA. He was the man who was immortalized in Oliver Stone's film, JFK, where the colonel who sat on the bench with Kevin Costner and urged him to continue looking because he knew there was a conspiracy. In other words, Fletcher Prouty knew. Fletcher Prouty has gone to be with the Lord, but you'll actually hear him talking about what happened. You'll hear Dr. Crenshaw, who was a young surgical resident at Parkland Hospital when they brought in President Kennedy, when they brought in John Connally, when they brought in Lee Harvey Oswald. Fascinating insight into history and interview with, of course, Lee Harvey Oswald, and then, of course, our JFK assassination update. And, of course, that is an interview with Madeline Murray Brown, and, of course, she was Lyndon Johnson's mistress. And she talks about the meeting that was held the evening before when they were planning the assassination of the President of the United States. Now, Madeline is no longer alive either, but we have her voice, and you'll actually hear these stories. You must understand that they killed an American president. They were able to get away with it, and the same way that they've gotten away with so many other things, the FBI went around to the various people who witnessed the murder of the American president and told him, you didn't see what you thought you saw. You really saw. Let us tell you exactly what you saw. And that's how you do an investigation. Both of these four tape sets, the JFK assassination and JFK assassination update, available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. An important part of history, Madeline Duncan Brown. We have Dr. Stan back here, and of course our guest this afternoon is Joel Skousen. Joel, let's pick up the story from there. You were talking about, of course, Haiti and how this technique is used over and over again. We install political leaders and then we take them out of power. And of course, the justification for what they're doing in Haiti today?
Well, there's two levels of strategy and justification, I think, from a globalist perspective. One is that you use communists to break down a nation and a government, and then you resurrect it and you come in as saviors and provide them a moderate globalist socialist who doesn't, runs a better company. They always, leave. It's still socialism, it's still control. The UN never leaves them to be free again when they do this, but they think that they're better off, and so it's a way of using Hegelian conflict to make people satisfied with globalist control of their country. Now, that's on one level. At another level, the United States and everything that they do internationally in terms of intervention has as a purpose, I believe, of antagonizing the rest of the world, especially the world that is pro-left. The rest of the world feels that Aristide is a democratically elected leader. They are protected from the knowledge about excesses of Aristide. They think he's a champion of the people, which is the myth that has been promoted for many years, even by the United States. So when the United States comes in and unilaterally throws him out, and believe me, the Aristide testimony is going all through Europe and all through the rest of the world.
Now, that is that he was kidnapped rather than...
That's right. It's the front page news, U.S. lying, Aristide kidnapped, did not resign voluntarily. So once again, the U.S. looks like the bully in the world, which they are. They are running through the world, rampaging, exercising their will, always in the name of democracy, but we know that that's a sham. In fact, there is a major purpose, I believe, in antagonizing the world. I think they are purposely intending to engender sufficient backlash so that someday the U.S. is the object of a preemptive nuclear strike from Russia and China, who, as we talked about before the break, the media has been covering for years for the increasing military might in secret that Russia's been going on, the fact that this was a carefully crafted deception, the fall of the Soviet Union. They're still planning on striking America. They are leaving a major portion of the human part of their military services underfunded, concentrating media-wise on the decrepit submarine fleet. They're not telling people they're still building new submarines and that they're modernizing their missiles and their submarines and their essential attack vehicles. Getting ready for the strike. The media is deliberately covering for it. The United States knows about this. U.S. intelligence is not allowed to talk openly about Russian preparations for war. It still is a few years off. I'm projecting sometime around the end of this decade. China won't be ready till then. But this is the major threat, is the United States is purposely antagonizing the rest of the world for globalist purposes so that the U.S. eventually will get taken out of the picture as the policeman of the world. Our leaders will come out of their bunkers and encourage Americans in the name of God, country, and the Constitution, which they despise, the Constitution to go and help build up the New World Order so that we can beat this great new horrible threat, the resurgence of communism, which they'll claim they knew nothing about. And I will be there, and you will be there to say they did know. To be warned about this.
Well, we hope that we're going to be there, Joel.
Well, I intend to survive this.
All right. Well, I think that we will do everything we can. I hope that
you're prepared to.
Well, if I do, it'll be with God's help. And
yes, certainly
nothing
that
I'm smart enough to be able to do on my own. But we're in for some very difficult times, ladies and gentlemen. And I really I have Joel on because I believe he's absolutely right. We're heading towards a nuclear war. They've blocked every effort to have any sort of a anti-ballistic missile system. And these 20 anti-ballistic missiles that George Bush is putting in is sort of like putting salt in the ocean. It's really not going to accomplish much of anything, and George W. Bush knows that, but the American people feel so much safer because now we have an anti-ballistic missile system, about 20 missiles, and how many missiles do they have on the other side there to lob at us?
Well, they have at least 3,000.
Okay, so?
So it's not going to be but a drop in the bucket. That's even if you had a 100% kill ratio, you could take out 20 warheads.
But, of course, these aren't going to have a 100% kill ratio.
Of course not. They don't have an explosive warhead on them, so we'll be lucky to get maybe 10% kill ratio.
So we've actually designed a missile that we know isn't going to work. But the American people have this perception. Everything is perception. And if you can convince the American people that black is white, with smoke and mirrors and rhetoric, and that's what it's all. It's all about rhetoric over reality, symbolism over substance. We'll be right back here in just a moment or two with Joel Skousen. And, of course, we'll welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or... here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. If there's any one tape
that you should hear. It's my talk on geopolitics, an untold story that is vitally important if America is to survive as a free nation. It goes into the background of the forces that have created the wars of the 20th century, the Boer War, the First World War, the Second World War, Korea, Vietnam. We go into the ideological and the spiritual battle behind the forces that have moved America from crisis to crisis and are currently undermining the very fabric of our society. That number again, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and the tape, Geopolitics. It is vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for copies of my talk on geopolitics.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I ask you, what would you do if suddenly you didn't have any water coming out of your tap? Could such a thing happen in America? Could we have a major crisis? Could we have an attack on America? Well, I think that the one thing you have to do is hope and pray it never occurs, but if it is, make your preparations, but make them now. And that's one reason we got ourselves a Berkey Light water filter. Now, you can get the big Berkey, which is made of stainless steel, and, of course, it's a standard, been used for 150 years. You put 2 gallons of water in the top, comes out the bottom. It's got ceramic filters packed with activated carbon. You can use pool water, pond water, river water, any sort of water you want, and it's drinkable. Now, you can use it ordinarily if you don't like the flavor of your water. You want to get rid of most of the chlorine, and you've got a bad taste. The Big Berkey gives you wonderful-tasting water. It's $239.95 plus shipping and available in every state of the Union except California and Iowa. So we got a Berkey Light. It's made of Lexan, which has the advantage that you can actually see the water level. The filters are known as black Berkey filters. There's only 2 of them because they're much larger than the ceramic filters, and they work much better than the ceramic filters. And, of course, they'll last at least 2 years, although if you're, and even longer, of course, if you're using them on a regular basis, you better replace them at the end of 2 years, and they'll take out the chlorine, and they'll take out the MTBE, and they do, we call them water purifiers. Now, if you've got fluoride in your water, you'll want to get special post-filters to take out the fluoride, and you can get the post-filters for both the Big Berkey and the Berkey Light. The Berkey Light's only $199.95, and whichever one you buy, well, we'll be glad to give you a 4-tape set or a video that we have produced. If you buy them through us, give us a call at 1-800-544-8989. That's 1-800-544-8927, and ask for the Big Berkey or the Berkey Light. Well, Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this afternoon is Joel Skousen. And Joel, before I forget it, I want you to tell our listeners right now how they can get the World Affairs Brief, which you put out and which I read religiously every week when it comes.
The World Affairs Brief is my weekly news analysis service that comes out every Friday. They can look on the details if they go to my website, joelskousen.com, and that's spelled JoelSkousen, joelskousen.com. All of the archives, if you click on the World Affairs Brief section on my website, all of the archives from 2003 on back are there, so you can read a mini history of the world for the last 4 or 5 years. In addition, if you don't have access to the web, there is a print edition of the World Affairs Brief, and you can call my office during working hours at 801-224-4746 and request samples of the printed edition, and I'll send them out to you.
All right, very good. Let's go to Ben, who's calling from Salinas. Ben, do you have a question?
Yes, I have a brief comment and 2 brief questions. The comment is this. Ever since November 22nd, 1963, these elitists are literally dumbing down our children and enslaving us with our own tax dollars, hanging us with our own rope, and I'm just wondering how long they can do this secret government elitist multinational billionaire thing to us until we do something about it, because I believe the power still resides within we the people. Now my question is this. Do you, sir, and this is to your guest, do you see any parallel between what we did to Noriega? We killed 8,000 Panamanians to arrest him and bring him here and hold him incognito. He's never been allowed to tell the media what he knows and who trained him at the School of the Americas and the CIA. any parallel there with what they're doing to Aristide?
Okay, let's get the answer to that question. Do you see any parallel between what happened to Noriega and what happened to Aristide, other than Aristide got to Africa and Noriega got put in jail?
Yeah.
I do see some parallel, but there are some major differences. First, Noriega was taken down because he started taking too big of a cut.
Yep.
And so he had to be removed. He was, of course, going to use in his defense, as anybody who's working secretly to the CIA is going to use the defense that, hey, I'm working with the CIA and I've got all this evidence to prove it. So the judge said none of that evidence is allowed in court and the media is prohibited from reporting on it.
Now, I think it's so important to know that Noriega was actually working for the CIA and helping them smuggle drugs into this country, and that's why he wasn't allowed to speak in court. What sort of a trial do you get if you can't speak in your own defense?
And if you can't introduce any evidence concerning the U.S. government or the CIA. Now, in Aristide, I think what happened is that they used preventative measures there. They knew that Aristide could squawk on them. He may have, in some secret negotiations with the U.S. Embassy people who are mostly work for the CIA, they're embedded within the embassy, he probably said, look, I can blow the whistle on you guys if you attempt to overthrow me. And so they, I think, surprised him at his house, pulled out his bodyguards, which are U.S. controlled, showed up at his door before he, and they probably cut the phone so that he couldn't make any phone calls, handcuffed him, and whisked him away. Now, one of the reasons why, you know, that I believe that the U.S. was caught flat-footed in Haiti is that they flew that aircraft around and had to refuel it twice, trying to get a predictable nation not only to accept Aristide, but to put him under house arrest. And that's interesting. How do you get a country to accept him and then put him under house arrest? And the only anomaly going on here is that he has been allowed to make some phone calls, and none of those phone calls have involved any of his dealings with the CIA about drugs, etc. I'm not so sure whether or not he's going to leave that for a future time or whether or not they've cut him off so that he can't make those phone calls again. It would take some proof before he could get the American people to believe that, of course. He could tell a story about being kidnapped, which he has, and that's very believable, and that's been picked up by the press around the world.
All right, let's go to Rose calling from New York. Hi, Rose. How are you doing?
Hi, good evening. I have a question. Depending on the answer, I'll give you an account of an incident.
No, well, do you have a question? Because we're running out of time.
Yes.
There's something else we want to get to.
Okay. Is it true that there was supposedly suitcase nukes or dirty nukes, you know, planted upstate New York?
That's a little off the subject.
Well, but I don't believe so. First of all, those have to be renewed. They cannot be just stashed and left alone. I think that was propaganda in order to generate a lot of taxpayer money to go in and so-called save the nuclear arsenal from Russia. There's no evidence that that is true. If it is true, it is still controlled by Russia, and they are being renewed and maintained by Russian troops, not by
Sarah. We had a ship up here, Norwegian, I think it was, totally manned by Russian, overturned in good weather, no rough seas, in port. It wasn't even mentioned on the big news media. It overturned, and the next day they took the Russians home, except the three who went missing, supposedly dead.
You mean it's the ship just capsized in the port?
Yes, and they still have, they cannot figure out why it had only 20% of its cargo ability. The ship was sold, it took a week, a little over a week. They claim they found the three dead Russians, and then they sold the ship, or were supposed to sell the ship, for practically nothing locally.
All right, fine. Well, thanks so much. I don't know anything about it.
They were telling us about almanacs.
All right. And, of course, focusing on the gays kissing in San Francisco to distract us from all sorts of important things. Thanks very much.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Joel, you had something else you wanted to bring up. What was that?
Yes, I wanted to talk about the latest fiasco that's going on in Israel. You remember we discussed on this show and other shows the fact that Ariel Sharon and the government went to extraordinary lengths to negotiate a very one-sided agreement whereby he would trade one hostage held by the Hezbollah and three dead bodies for 400 of the most live, worst terrorists that were in his Palestinian terrorists in Israeli jails.
Now, that isn't a very good trade. I mean, you get back three dead bodies and one businessman, and you let go 400 terrorists. It's almost as if we're trying to keep the terrorists active, isn't it?
Yeah. Now, Now it comes out in Israel by Mariv. Newspaper yesterday morning has revealed that Tannenbaum, Elchanan Tannenbaum, who was released, is in fact the son-in-law of Sharon and his wife's former business partner. In other words, Shimon Cohen was in partner with Sharon's first wife, Lili Sharon. They managed for years a company called Shikmin Company, which was owned jointly, and their son-in-law was Elchanan Tannenbaum. Now, he's back, of course, been held under interrogation by and has never seen the light of day since he came back. It's now been leaked out as well that he was a spy, either a double agent or a spy. The stories are really swirling now, plus the son-in-law of Sharon's former business partner, who he never mentioned in any of his hard-sell negotiations with the Israeli cabinet, and they only agreed to this exchange by a bare one-vote majority. And there looks like a conflict of interest here, plus the fact that we've got some spying going on.
Well, I really think it's such a tragedy that you would release all those terrorists because, you know, you gotta get, it's like criminals. You take them off the streets, you get less crime. You take the terrorists off the streets, you get less terrorism. And they released 400 terrorists. And as I saw that, I said, how could they possibly have done that? How could Ariel Sharon have been that stupid unintentionally?
Well, in the first place, this was an excuse to release these terrorists. You know, Sharon doesn't really work on behalf of the good of the Israeli people. He is a globalist. He's connected with your Kissinger group here, as well as they're playing like they're on the right wing. His best friend is Shimon Peres, who is the arch-leftist and peace candidate in Israel. If he were truly, you know, on the side of what he claims to be of Israeli sovereignty, he wouldn't be trying to give away Israel and foment or at least preserve terrorism. I mean, the Israeli government is completely different than the legitimate Israeli population. Just as the radical Russian-connected Palestinian authority is very different than the honest Palestinians who don't have any liberties to choose what kind of leaders they would really like to have there.
Sort of like, I understand, after Super Tuesday, why a member of Skull and Bones, George W. Bush, called a member of Skull and Bones, John Kerry, Senator John Kerry, to congratulate him on winning a Super Tuesday, and now he's going to be the Democratic nominee. So now we're going to have two members of Skull and Bones duking it out, and as John Kerry said, the president said he hoped it would be a spirited campaign. Well, I'm sure it'll be a spirited campaign. I'm sure it'll be smoke and mirrors, rhetoric over reality, a lot of arguing back and forth, a lot of insults back and forth, but never discussing the really important issues. I think it's all showbiz.
I think it's important to realize that the establishment fully intends to reelect George Bush. They control both major parties. But we do have a majority in the United States of liberal and democratic benefit-corrupted voters, so they really truly have to manipulate the votes in order to get a presumed conservative Republican elected. Now, of course, they win a lot of those liberal votes by George Bush running a liberal program. It's a big spending, big government type globalist program. But they've specifically manipulated this Democratic primary in order to get John Kerry the nomination because he is the one that they can, he's got enough skeletons in his closet that they can discredit him. Just like Al Gore, they specifically chose Al Gore to run, and he didn't realize that he was being set up for a loss. But because he had the particular characteristics, he would make the faux pas in his speeches, he would claim too much, they could laugh at him and relatively discredit him. Even then, they had to pull a rabbit out of the hat through the Supreme Court to get George Bush elected. Once again, they're pulling off a Ralph Nader candidacy to pull 4 to 5% away from John Kerry. John Kerry also has a radical leftist environment. We're going to see the press focus more and more his anti-war record, so that he can't claim the patriotic image that George Bush will be able to claim. I think that they're setting up Kerry, who's a fairly lackluster campaigner, by the way, for a loss, and that's one of the reasons why the more charismatic John Dean, was who started out so-called unbeatable, was torn apart by the media, putting on this day after day rehashing of his over-enthusiastic response to his supporters. Really an eye-popping, excessive, emotional, get-carried-away view that they could have suppressed. They could have downplayed that. They could have explained it away, but they didn't. They hyped it. That showed manipulation. And I think the reason they pulled John Edwards up is, first of all, to make it look like a horse race so that it can continue to report something of interest, but also to focus on the main issue, which will be loss of jobs. Now, John Kerry can't run as strong on that because he voted for NAFTA, GATT, and all of these globalist provisions that have allowed this extreme job loss in America. And so Ralph Nader will be able to pull that up as his major campaign. And you'll see him draw off Kerry votes from Labor and from the Green parties in the far left as we see this campaign unfold.
Well, you know, what's really so interesting is the government's pouring money out like it's going out of style. And even over in the Silicon Valley, which has really not been doing very much, there's a lot more hiring. There's a lot more going on. People are getting jobs back. I think they're only temporary jobs. But, you know, you spend enough money through the federal government, you can create a certain number of jobs.
But this is a second bubble they're creating, Stan.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and this bubble is going to pop, and when it pops, it's even going to be worse than the first bubble. But
because the real estate market will come down this next time.
Right. And, of course, you know, I suspect maybe they'll even find the wicked Osama bin Laden before the election. All of these things will make George Bush look really fairly good. In other words, a few more jobs out there. You know, the market doesn't collapse. And, of course, if they find Osama bin Laden, he will probably be our next president.
Well, you know, interestingly, you know, I've always maintained that Osama bin Laden never did go out of CIA control.
I know.
And so it doesn't matter if they actually catch him or catch one of his lookalikes. They're not going to do anything to him. They simply keep him in a hospital where they can help him with his dialysis machines all the time they're claiming that we've got him under interrogation. If, you know, and it's my opinion they really didn't capture Saddam Hussein. I believe that was one of the lookalikes. And they don't intend to for many years to, you know, bring him out to the public so he can be scrutinized. I mean, they can eliminate or say that they eliminate a person, and Saddam Hussein may still well be in the Russian republics living in the lap of luxury as any other person who's done the will of the CIA for many years.
And I think that's really so important that the American people know that, you know, if you read the book by Robert Baer entitled See No Evil, he was a CIA agent in Iraq in 1995. And in his book, he says every Iraqi he met believed that the United States government was keeping Saddam Hussein in power, and many believed he worked for the CIA. We have a book called Holy Babylon written a decade or more ago. Talk about CIA and Saddam Hussein. Saddam worked for the CIA in the 1955 era, and I'm sure you've gone into that as well, haven't you?
Yes, yes.
And so I think it's so vitally important that people understand nothing as it appears to be. If you'd like references to that book and the page numbers and even the pages, we'll be glad to send them to you. If you call us at 1-800-544-8927, that's 1-800-5-HIV-MORE. So the wicked Saddam Hussein, but who's looking after Saddam now? Why, they didn't leave him under the control of the army. They turned him over to the CIA. Isn't that interesting?
Yes. And, of course, you know, we'll see what kind of justice they do. It's very interesting. You know, they've never brought Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the supposed mastermind of 9/11, never brought him to trial. How long does it take? How many years does it take to interrogate someone? And he still hasn't revealed where they got the pilot training, which means that, you know, there have been many convenient leaks from Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, all coming through the CIA, all conveniently confirming the 9/11 version of events, but we've never seen this person face-to-face or have anyone ask him any of the tough questions.
But, of course, there is a great deal to suggest that Sheikh Khalid Mohammed was actually over there in the Philippines in the late 1994, meeting with the people there, Abu Sayyaf, and an American known as Terry Nichols. That would be very embarrassing to bring out, especially now that Terry Nichols is being retried, and suddenly the FBI has decided, gee, maybe we made a mistake. Maybe we ought to look at the investigation again. And they're not going to look at the possible connections to the Islamic terrorists and Osama bin Laden in 1994. They're trying to connect this to some right-wing militia bank robbers here.
Well, of course, it all appears, since Khalid Sheikh Mohammed worked for the ISI at the same time that the CIA worked hand and foot with the ISI, that's the CIA of Pakistan, that obviously the CIA knew of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed's, he was doing their bidding. So his presence in Philippines would prove that there was a CIA connection to the Philippines and to the inducement of Terry Nichols and McVeigh to pull off this, which they didn't do alone, of course. The U.S. is still protecting the other John Does, which were agent provocateurs, I believe.
Amen. Well, Joel, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so very much for being with us, and we'll look forward to having you on again here in the not-too-distant future.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye. And our guest has been Joel Skousen of World Affairs Brief, always provocative, one of the best informed people I know. We'll be right back here in just a moment at Radio Liberty.
Have you ever wondered what the Vietnamese War was really all about? Why America, the most powerful nation in the world, spent 10 years fighting in Southeast Asia against a nation the size of the state of Mississippi, and America lost that war? Do you really believe that happened by accident? There's so much to the story of Vietnam that the American people have never really known. And in our four-tape set, Vietnam, the Untold Story, you're going to get the information that you need to understand the tragedy of that event. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for Vietnam, the Untold Story, the story of what really happened in Vietnam that has been suppressed from the American people for the last 20 years.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here. Let me just comment on the men we abandoned after the Second World War. We have the Senate Foreign Relations Committee report. It's $10 for the report. And you'll actually read there from the Senate Foreign Relations Committee report about the 20 to 25,000 American soldiers who went overseas to fight the wicked Adolf Hitler in Europe and ended up being betrayed and sent off to Siberia, where they all died. There might be a few of them still alive now. I sort of doubt it, though. Even Yeltsin was quite willing to help us find them if there were any of them alive, and the American government did everything they could to prevent Yeltsin from talking to the American people about that. We have a wonderful book. It's called Betrayed, written by our good friend Dr. Joe Douglas. That's Betrayed. If you haven't read it, it's the story of the men we abandoned. And then, of course, there's the Senate Foreign Relations Committee report. And then, of course, we have a four-tape set, The Men We Left Behind. And then another four-tape set, One Man Came Back. It was a story of Bobby Garwood. And we have so much information available through Radio Liberty, and these are classic four-tape sets, and we hope that many of you will want to get them, and you have our permission to copy them. Because, you see, a nation that will betray its fighting men one day will betray its own citizens. And this is because there have been two forces in America since its inception, one evil and the other, of course, altruistic and Christian. And until the time of FDR, why, we were primarily a Christian nation. And that all changed. And the dark side took control, and they put their emblem on the back of the dollar bill, a pyramid cap by the eye of Lucifer. They understand its significance. You don't. Call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Ask for the Senate Foreign Relations Committee report, Betrayed, The Many Left Behind, and One Man Returned. Well, Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we're really dependent upon those of you out in the listening audience who believe that there's a problem, who would like to partner with us in this epic struggle to determine whether this nation or any nation conceived under God can long endure. So we hope that many of you will be willing to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, and to do that, you simply give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, and when you join the Radio Liberty family, you get our four best tapes of the month, you get our monthly newsletter. But more than that, you help us pay the bills as we buy radio time on stations all across America so that we're heard on 60 stations every single week, sometimes every day, sometimes just half an hour a week. but at least the truth is getting out there that the people will never get from other sources, and certainly not from Rush Limbaugh, Bill O'Reilly, Tom Brokaw, or Dan Rather. Did you know that Dan Rather has a ranch? He owns it in common with Donald Rumsfeld. How objective do you think his reporting is going to be on, of course, the Secretary of Defense at the present time? Well, there's so many stories out there that need to be told, and this is what we do 5 hours every day. You can hear our programs 5 hours a day on the Internet at www.radioliberty.com. That's 3 hours on Radio Liberty, 2 hours on Genesis, 1 hour on the American Freedom Network at AmericanNewsNet.com. And then, of course, you can hear us 4 hours a day on the shortwave. 2 hours of that is on Genesis. So if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family and help us as we do reach out, and increasingly with our evening program now on shortwave, if you're here on the West Coast and you can't get our regular evening program, you can pick it up with a shortwave set. And if you'd like to know what a good shortwave set is, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. And we want you to talk to others about our program. Encourage them to listen to the shortwave program, which picks up the whole western half of the United States every evening. And then, of course, to tell others about our Internet programs for people who have access to computers. Because we have to have one person telling another person telling another person. We don't have the access to television like the other side does. This terrible, terrible means of communication that's able to control the reality and the emotions of the American people. And, of course, distort the truth about so much of what's going on, and distort the fact and conceal the fact we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, cultural, financial, educational battlefield. And so we do hope that you will join us and tell others about our programming. And if you'd like a free copy of our February newsletter, Joel Skousen was talking about how we seem to be trying to intentionally antagonize the rest of the world. Well, we simply, in our February newsletter, quote from the report of the Phase 1 report of the National Commission on Security in the 21st Century. This commission, just by chance, 13 of the 14 commissioners came from the Council on Foreign Relations, but they talk about how everything we're doing is, so much of what we're doing is antagonizing the rest of the world, which will bring a terrorist attack on America. The report came out in September of 1999. If you'd like a free copy of that report, the my newsletter that goes into the background and gives you the sources of reference, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 and ask for the free copy of the February newsletter. You have our permission to copy it, to circulate it, to try to get the American people to understand that nothing happens by accident. We're doing everything we can to antagonize the rest of the world. And I fear that there will be terrible, terrible results. Again, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival, because if the American people don't turn back to God, why should God ever bless this country again? We ask you to pray for our leaders and ministers, but please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Until tomorrow, when we're with you once again, Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.